The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Nice to have some intro music back, you know, not that cold, bam, we're off and running, so that'll be good. Probably no corny scripts this year. We'll probably be able to do away with that, but going to get into, we'll touch briefly on Montgomery Snell, what we think is going on there. Lots of Yankees news, which is kind of going to be implied by this Snell and Montgomery stuff. So get into that, and then we'll discuss some Red Sox spring training observations. We are what? Are we less than 2 weeks? No. Well, 2.5 weeks. That's what it's at. That's what it's at. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Cody Paulson, Jason Kelly. Jason has his middle name on the Zoom thing, so one of these times I'm going to slip up. I literally did have a millisecond brain fart there. I'm like, yeah, so anyway. But that's why I don't host during the regular season. But anyway, so how are you, gentlemen?
Not too bad. You know, it's been kind of nice during the day just to, you know, working from home, being able to watch the Red Sox on. Oh, wait, no, that's right. I couldn't because Nesson didn't show the game again today because they just continue to mail it in during spring training. So, and I didn't get to see Trevor Story have a big day. I've been waiting for that. So thanks, Nesson. Good job.
He's like the spring training MVP. We'll get to that shortly. But that's a curse if you've paid any attention to previous spring trainings. The spring training MVP always sucks that, you know, the rest of the regular season. So we'll get into that. All right. So Yankees have a problem. Gerrit Cole might be the next one to go under the knife. Lucas Giolito, did we get a verdict on him? I forgot to follow up on that. Do we know if it was full Tommy John?
Or, I believe it was. Yeah, I thought I saw that it was full Tommy John. It's not like a brace surgery or anything.
Okay. I can't believe I dropped the ball on that. But all right. It's in his best interest, obviously, to just have the whole thing done. You know, we didn't insure the contract. In our wildest imaginations, if we make the playoffs next year, he might pitch for us at that point. Because he's going to opt into that $19 million option. So. But anyway, as I was saying, Gerrit Cole under the knife. Previous offer out to Blake Snell for 6 years, roughly $168 million. Snell, like a dummy, said no. Might have to sign with the Angels now, who knows. But still an option until he does with the Yankees. And they're talking to the White Sox about Dylan Cease, so... Do we think New York is going to make a move here?
I think it really just kind of depends upon what comes out of that Gerrit Cole news, right? They're keeping it pretty tight-lipped, and I think they're kind of moving those MRIs, those, you know, results around with a couple of different opinions. I heard they're going to a second and third opinion. So, you know, whatever it is something that's definitely got them nervous. And I think, you know, depending upon which way that goes, they're going to be forced to make a move, right? At this point, I mean, we're still close to spring training, Terry. You mentioned it, two and a half weeks. We're starting to get the itch. You know, baseball games are starting to matter pretty soon here. Whoever you bring in isn't going to be ramped up, you know, until a couple weeks into the season, best case scenario. I don't care what kind of off-season program you've been working on, but it's still going to take you some time to get, you know, kind of game ready, hit your spots, the adrenaline, the whole nine. You know, yes, it's the Yankees, but it's still a bummer to see some of the game's best talent, you know, be injured. So you never wish that upon anyone. I think Boris might have overplayed his hand at the beginning of the offseason and kind of continues to hold strong. This offseason hasn't really had the talent to where you can kind of wave that big stick that it usually does. You know, so he's kind of using the same operating model that he does with his tier one free agents, with all of his free agents. You know, if they're tier one for that offseason, which I don't think is necessarily the best operating model. But then again, you know, he's debatably a billionaire, and, you know, I'm here working 5 days a week, being a big fan of Dining Club because they refuse to show the game. So it's hard to fathom the Yankees not making a move, especially, you know, after going in and getting Soto, looking at trade packages for Cease. Like, they're really exploring all the options, and the fact that they're reopening up, you know, negotiations and communication channels makes me think that, A, the cold news isn't what they were hoping to get, and B, that they're likely to strike.
Jason.
They're going to do something. Because you don't have the offseason that they did where, you know, as Cody mentioned, trading for Juan Soto, kind of beefing up their lineup a little bit more. And when you look at that rotation, you take Gerrit Cole out of there, Carlos Rodon is now your ace. And then it's Stroman, and then it's Cortez. There's still a lot of questions in that rotation. It's not exactly rock solid. And their bullpen is the same thing. That's not exactly rock solid either. And with Stroman, I mean, yeah, he's playing for his hometown team. He seems really happy there, but he's a ground ball pitcher. And that infield defense outside of Rizzo is a little scary. They've got DJ LeMahieu playing third base. I mean, that does not seem like it's going to work as an experiment. So they've got to do something. I don't think it's going to be Dylan Cease, because the White Sox are insistent. They really want their number two prospect, Spencer Jones, who's this, like, freak outfield prospect. He's 6'6", 235, left-handed power bat. The Yankees want him hitting 50 home runs a year at Yankee Stadium at some point. So I don't think they're going to make the trade, because the leading thought is that Soto's not going to sign an extension there, that he's going to walk. So eventually their outfield is going to be Judge and nobody else, because Verdugo will be a free agent as well. That's where they want Jason Dominguez and Spencer Jones to come in. Those are the two top prospects. So I don't think the Yankees are willing to give up Spencer Jones. And really, they just have to make the assessment. If you bring in Dylan Cease, let's say Gerrit Cole needs Tommy John, he's out for this year. If you bring in Dylan Cease, are the Yankees a World Series team? Or are they just a contender, might win the AL East, but, you know, Baltimore's right there too. You know, are they just going to hang around? So do you want to trade your future just to kind of compete? Or do you just say, you know what, let's go a different route. Let's, you know, maybe sign Snell to a shorter contract if we can, or, you know, bring in someone else to kind of supplement the rotation that's not going to cost our farm system anything and won't cost us a ton of money either. I think that's more the route they're going to go. I think the White Sox are asking for too much. I don't blame the White Sox. They should ask for a lot because they're rebuilding and they have leverage. They know the Yankees are desperate. So, yeah, you should ask for the number two prospect. New York has every right to say no, but White Sox can at least ask. And the reports on Twitter the last couple of hours are that now the Rangers have jumped in and they're starting to talk Dylan Cease. So I think either way, Dylan Cease could be on the move in the next week or two, but I don't think the Yankees have the stones to do it. I think they're really high on this kid, the Spencer Jones kid that the White Sox are insisting on getting back. So I think Cashman will pivot and he'll go a different route. But they got to do something, because you take Gerrit Cole out of that rotation, that's a lot weaker of a team, and he knows that. So I think he will do something. I just don't know exactly where he's going to pivot to.
There was a lot of speculation last winter whether or not Cashman and Boone would keep their jobs. They did. I don't know how they did and how they continue to. I mean, Cashman should have been out of there a while ago. But like you guys said, you don't trade for Juan Soto and not have everything shored up around him. You don't do it. I don't see how the Yankees financially can sign a guy like Soto, who's probably going to get around 500, I think, 500 million. He's already turned down 425 with the Nationals. So you got Judge big money. That's not working out too good. He just had an MRI on his one of his obliques. Apparently it's clean, so he should be good. But I don't see him getting healthier as we go. He's been fragile. We haven't really seen a big guy like him play out a full career, you know, into his late 30s. Maybe Frank Thomas, I think. He was a big guy, did play for quite a while, but those big guys seem to be somewhat fragile. And that's kind of why you want to get the Tristan Casas thing done. Get him locked up to that 7 or 8 year deal and have him for the healthier part of his career. He does have an injury history in the minors. So, but anyway, so I just don't see how the Yankees don't make a move here. To me, it's going to be Blake Snell. That's what I think is going to happen. The Angels are supposedly the favorites. Why would Snell want to go there and just waste away for the last few good years of his career?
I mean, personally, I kind of think that's what Blake Snell wants. I don't think he's a big market guy. I don't think mentally he can handle it. He's pitched in Tampa and San Diego, and he's had success there. But I think a market like New York would melt him. So in a way, I think he kind of just wants to get his money and live comfortably in LA. And I don't think he gives a damn if he ever wins. I really don't.
He and Anthony Rendon should start a podcast. Fit. They should start a podcast if they become teammates. But yeah, here's a list of Angels whiffs. I would put Albert Pujols in that category. CJ Wilson, Joe Blanton, Justin Upton, Zach Cosart, Josh Hamilton. That's a team where you go to end your career in any relevance whatsoever. I mean, I don't think we could have foreseen Pujols would have fell off as fast as he did. And I was always a Josh Hamilton guy because, you know, he came back from addiction. It was a cool story. I guess in recent years, he's had some issues. Hopefully he's gotten, you know, back on track again. But, and then, so with Jordan Montgomery, apparently they're not coming off of 7 years. According to a Heyman tweet, which is backed up by this article, this is a Bob Nightingale article. So I guess take it for what it's worth, but, oh no, it's by, never mind, USA Today, which is where Nightingale works, but it's by John Hoffling, I think is how he pronounces it. But still, as of today, 7 year deal. Who in their right mind is going to give it to him?
At the moment, nobody. That's the problem. They need to adjust. I mean, it's been long enough, and now teams are getting desperate. Injuries are cropping up, and they're still not willing to give this guy 7 years. So, you know, they got to wake up and adjust that number. That's ridiculous.
I mean, you touched on it. That's a great point, right? I think that might have been the initial, plan was just, hey, you know, somebody's going to get desperate. You're one of the top arms in the market. There's going to be a couple of Tommy Johns in spring training. It happens every year. We'll get somebody then. And those injuries have started to come up and, you know, there's been zero traction. So, you know, unless the Yankees get, you know, the worst news possible, I don't see 7 years being in the market. And the Yankees really can't afford to take these quote unquote gap years, right? Or, you know, appear like they're not going all in because of the financial commitments they have across the board. So, you know, they kind of keep pushing the chips in year after year after year. And those fans are getting more and more restless as well.
You know, I'm not going to get into Trevor Bauer. He's still out there. He pitched this weekend, looked pretty good against some of the Dodgers minor leaguers. But the other guy out there who has been pitching is Mike Clevinger. So I'm surprised they're not even going there. Like, you know, that could be that could basically fill up all of the Gerrit Cole absence. Not that Clevinger is Gerrit Cole, but it's a serviceable arm. And if you, I'm not a big baseball savant guy, but if you go there and you look up, you know, if you look at his charts, there's a lot of red on there, which is good. Red is good, blue is bad. So he did seem to find something last year and had a pretty good year, albeit in the AL Central, but still. I can't remember if I touched on this in the last podcast, but Scott Boris has had a terrible winter, starting with Blake Snell. If you're offered $168 million, you take it. That's close to $30 million a year for 6 years. You take that, especially for a high-risk guy like Snell. Jordan Montgomery, I mean, we just said 7 years. Seems like he's kind of, you know, he's not on planet Earth with that particular player. Matt Chapman last year, at some point last year, was offered 6 years, $120 million. That is stupid money. That's just stupid right there. Like, that's Matt Chapman is Trevor Story. They're the same guy. They're great, great defenders, high strikeout guys. They're going to be among the league leaders in strikeouts. And he ends up signing for 3 years, $54 million. After turning down six at 120. Like, what did Boris think he was going to get him? What was the number Boris had in mind? Like 180? That's just insane to me. JD Martinez, Boris guy, not out there. Probably another guy who's just... JD Martinez is at the Nelson Cruz part of his career, where just take one-year deals at 15 to 20 and just be happy. Be happy you're a major leaguer. And if you crush it, you're gonna get that the following year anyway. So Scott Boris is not having a good winter at all. And if I'm a mid-market guy, not a mid-market guy, I guess the point I'm making here is if Boris does great with elite guys, he's going to get Juan Soto a lot of money next year. There's no doubt about that. But if you're... Yeah, if you're essentially a mid-market guy, he's going to screw you so bad by misreading your market, misplaying it. I don't know if Scott Boris is the same guy anymore.
I think he just overestimates the value of those, like you said, those mid-tier clients. Like, he thinks Matt Chapman is still an MVP-level third baseman and should be getting, like you said, six over 180. He's not that anymore. Chapman at one point in his career was one of the best corner infielders in the game. That was a couple years ago. Now he's regressed at the plate. Defensively, he's still a wizard, but he's regressed at the plate. The strikeouts go up every year. And Boris still thinks, no, this guy is, you know, he's a top five right-handed power bat in the league. No, not anymore. He slipped. And Boris just, you know, is stubborn, and he thinks that he's smarter than everybody else, which is his biggest problem. And he just keeps telling his clients, no, just be patient. They will come to you. Trust me, I've been through this before. You'll get your money. And then this year it hasn't worked out. And I think Chapman probably just say, you know what? Like, I got to take this deal because I got to get to camp, dude. Like, I've got to go and like get some at bats in. I can't be sitting at home anymore. So yeah, it's 3 over 54. It's not what we wanted, but like, I got to go. Like, I got to start playing. So, and I imagine, you know, well, maybe not Snell because he's a loser, but I'm sure, you know, Montgomery's sitting there going, dude, can we get an offer, please? I want to start pitching. Like, I'm sick of sitting at home. Like, I need to ramp up. I want to be ready for opening day. Like, let's go. So I think Boris is really, really screwing his clients big time.
How many years do you think Montgomery's going to get?
Three. I think it's going to go down to three.
I think it could be two. I just, it's going to be something crazy. And Craig Breslow's worst nightmare is if it is going to be one or two. What if it's a Giolito type thing with one and an option? And how does he defend not going after him when the market came all the way down? You know, that's his worst fear right now.
I mean, at this point, I don't think anybody's going to look at Breslow as the problem if they don't go out and sign somebody. I think everybody kind of usurps Breslow and looks directly at the ownership, you know, with the self-imposed spending limits, regardless of what the deal comes down to, right? It could be the 1 year with a club option. And, you know, I'm sure the Red Sox will say they made an offer or whatever, they were in conversations, you know, had talks with, or you know, yada, yada, hang the banners. But at this point in time, until ownership shows me otherwise, I'm not going to hold any GM accountable for the lack of signing players.
I mean, if we were in on him, we would have been in on him at that price, though. I mean, maybe you still look at John Henry, but Breslow is going to be the guy that takes it either way. You know, so we'll see, but it's like the universe is forcing the Red Sox to do it, and they're just not going to cooperate with it. It's just absolutely insane. I don't think Cease goes anywhere. I think he's just going to stay. And I think that could be a mistake on the White Sox, because I could see Dylan Cease having a 4.65 ERA by the All-Star break, and they just screwed themselves. There's a good chance there's going to be no winners in the Cease market. And I mentioned Clevinger, who pitched on the same team and had a great year. Cease didn't. So I don't know that the Chicago program out there is gonna save him. And actually, and I pointed this out on social media, the Red Sox have been burnt on two Chicago pitchers, Chris Sale, Lucas Giolito. Some people point out the World Series with Sale, and I'm quick to fire back, well, that was the trade. He pitched that after the trade. It wasn't the extension. And then the Yankees have already been burnt on Carlos Rodon, who has a 6-something ERA right now in spring training. Nestor Cortez, 8.10. He might be a one-year wonder at this point. I mean, he hasn't been healthy, though, but... So I don't know. It would be the most New York thing ever to fleece themselves on Cease just for him to not figure it out. And then that's a terrible ballpark for him. Marcus Stroman has been pitching well, 1.74. So he's probably their new ace. But yes. All right. So you want to get into some Red Sox?
Let's do it.
I'm going to open it up with this. Bobby Dalbec hits an epic grand slam, and everyone seems to think he's back. I was like, no. Oh, man. No, absolutely not.
Oh, he's still the same guy. He's still the same Bobby Dalbec. It's, you know, I know he had a very good year down in AAA last year, and everyone was saying, why isn't he up, or how are they not trading him for someone? I think you're kind of seeing it now, because other teams around the league weren't fooled. They're like, yeah, he's hitting home runs in Worcester, which is a launching pad. Everyone hits home runs in Worcester. We're not fooled. We're not giving you a pitching prospect for this guy. We saw what he was at the major league level. He sucks.
I mean, the only positive he can say is at least he hit it when it mattered. You know, guys were on base. The game was close to put us ahead. You know, it wasn't down 7 in the 8th and he hits a solo home run. You're like, great, thanks, Bob. You know, but yeah, I mean, the average is the same. The strikeouts are up. You know, yeah, he's got some stakes and he's got some power, but unfortunately, you know, I think he's just that classic 4A player, right? You know, you can bring him up in a spot, you know, if you're desperate, right? You're down a first baseman or, you know, a shortstop or third base, wherever they're putting him in the field these days, but he doesn't have the staying power to be up at the major league level, you know, for 150 games and contributing at a high level for all of those, which is unfortunate, you know. The guy seems to go about the game the right way. It's, you know, he's trying hard. He got glasses. You know, he's trying to do what he can do to stick around. It just sometimes, you know, there's a reason it's a select few that get to play this game for a living.
I could see Bobby Dalbec in 9 years being the manager of the Colorado Rockies. Like, I think that's his destiny in life. It won't be as a player, but we'll see. And this happens all the time. I mean, so many of these guys were good minor leaguers and got jobs. You know what I mean? I think AJ Hinch, he did have an MLB career, but not a stellar one, and becomes a great manager, albeit, you know, with some controversy. Seydon Rafaela leading the Red Sox in at-bats. He's also leading the Red Sox in home runs. Jason, what are your thoughts on him?
I think it's time. He should be in the opening day starting lineup, opening day roster. He should be right there in center field. It's time. Like, don't wait around with him. Don't send him down to AAA, you know, until mid-May so that you gain a year of service control. I hate that. That is so annoying. So this guy who is on fire in the spring, and yeah, okay, spring training, sometimes you're hitting off of major league players, sometimes you're hitting off of guys who are going to be bagging groceries in a couple of weeks. But either way, he's on fire. And we always knew that, like, the glove was pretty good there and that he's a good athlete. Now the bat is alive and he's showing power from the right side, which is something that the Red Sox desperately need. Because Tyler O'Neill is not going to stay healthy all year. We know this. He already got hurt in the spring. He's going to have an IL stint at some point. And if that happens in April, you're going to want to call up Rafaela anyway if he's already down there. So don't mess around with the service time. Don't worry about that crap. Just put him in the opening day starting lineup. Put him somewhere where it makes sense and let it play out. They did it with Casas. And, you know, they stuck with Casas when he sucked for a month and a half. And everyone, you know, belittled us for saying, oh, maybe he needs more time in AAA. And to his credit, he figured it out because he's the real deal. If Rafael is the real deal, even if he struggles a little bit in April, he will figure it out. And this is what this Red Sox team needs because, like, Tyler O'Neill, I think, will be a good player for this team, but I don't think that he's going to be, you know, this savior that everyone thinks he's going to be because he still has an injury history. He still strikes out a lot. So why not bring up the future? If you're going to suck anyway, which they've pretty much told us they're going to because they didn't want to sign any free agents except for a guy who had an elbow problem. So if you're going to suck anyway, at least let the kids play. You're high on this kid. He's one of your top prospects and he's killing it in spring and you have a spot for him open, put him in there, let him play. I think it's time. Don't mess around with it.
Cody.
You took the take right from me. I was going to say the same thing, man. You know, start the clock on this kid. Prove that you believe in him. Stick with him, right? Give him the Dahlbeck treatment. Give him the Duran treatment. Give him the Casas treatment. You know, when they brought him up, Duran was in a little bit more of an emergency situation, but we kept Dahlbeck up. We gave him all the opportunities in the world, and he didn't figure it out. That's going to happen, right? But if you believe in this kid, if you think this kid can be part of the future, Jason, you mentioned it. You know, he's a right-handed bat, which adds extra value, which is, gives him, you know, I think a little bit more staying power. Let the kid figure it out at the major league level because he's going to have to do it eventually, right? You know, he could be a wizard down in AAA and he still could struggle in the majors next year or, you know, after May when they gain another year of control. But if you reward him for having a hot spring and you say, hey, look, this team needs you right now. You're the guy that we can rely on. You're the guy that we can build upon. I think that's going to be a lot for wind in his sails. And, you know, yeah, we could be bad this year, but those at-bats are valuable, right? Those reps are valuable. You know, he's been in the organization. He's sat, he's learned. You know, I don't see – you're not risking anything by bringing him up, I guess, is another way to look at it, right? You know, it's not like we are with an aging rotation and have one or two more pops at a World Series and we can't afford to lose one of our nine, you know, defensive spots or one of our nine batting order spots to a guy that's trying to figure it out. We're primed to figure out if we've got prospects that can carry water. And so, you know, I don't think there could be a better position to bring up some rookies to see what they have.
I don't think Rafaela is going to have the same leash that Casas had. And the reason I believe that is because it was either Casas or Dahlbeck. So pick your poison. If Yoshida's going to play every day and if he's not in the outfield, he'll be DHing. If Abreu and Duran heat up, that could force them to option Rafaela. I hope it doesn't happen. You know, he's your only right-handed prospect in the outfield. So you want to develop him. The Red Sox are a lot more dynamic. Even if he's not the 2-4 hole hitter, you're hoping he'll be. You know, maybe he's a 7 or 8 hole hitter, but you're just too lefty heavy. him and Tyler O'Neill, they're your only righties. And O'Neill's only going to be here for a year and probably limited during that year, as Jason pointed out. So hopefully Rafaela will be a big surprise. Hopefully he'll exceed expectations and be a viable right-handed at-bat. We still don't know who's going to be slotted between Devers and Casas. I've been pointing that out recently. I don't know. It's just crazy to me that you didn't make a move.
Well, and something else to keep in mind, too, with regards to how does Rafaela fit in. Rob Refsnyder has a crack in his toe now. That happened today. He got hit by a pitch. He's got a crack in his toe. So if he requires an IL stint and he's going to miss the opener anyway, why wouldn't you just say, okay, take your time, Rob. Let's, you know, we'll mix Rafael in there. And then you can platoon. If you're up against a lefty, Rafaela starts and either Abreu or Duran sit. And, you know, if it's a righty, then maybe you give Rafael a day off or something like that. You can mix and match a little bit and still get all these guys proper playing time. So the Refsnyder injury might force her hand a little bit, but it is something to consider that, you know, if he needs time on the IL and if that's a bad crack in his toe, then, you know, the decision might already be made.
I mean, we're hoping for the best with Rafaela. He's got so many guys around them that are trying to prove themselves. Duran is probably thinking, what do I have to do to prove that I'm a major leaguer after a great season? Abreu is just trying to establish himself also as a major leaguer. Tyler O'Neill, this is his walk year. This is his last chance to make a big statement going into next winter to get hopefully a 2-3-4 year deal. I don't think he's going to be looking at a massive contract, even if he has a great year. But so many guys have so many incentives to do well. So hopefully Rafaela, the big knock on him was his pitch recognition. That's what they've been worried about all along. That's why he didn't really get a call up last year, outside of September. We desperately need someone from the right side of the plate to break through. I don't really know what the ceiling is for him. A couple years ago, they were saying Rafaela could be the next Mookie Betts. Like, that was out there. People were talking about that. They have a similar build, similar, you know, elite defense, same side of the plate. I mean, Mookie's, I've already said, I think he's the most talented player next to Ted Williams to ever wear a Red Sox uniform, just based on pure talent. So will Rafaela get there? No. But, man, we desperately need somebody to emerge. And if he does emerge, maybe that's one less thing you're looking for next winter in a right-handed at-bat. So hopefully it'll happen. Let's talk starting pitching. It really hasn't been bad. Now, they're only pitching, like, I think most of them have just, you know, gone three or so innings, 3 1/3, 3 2/3, so they're not really seeing a full order the second and third time through. And, you know, the sample sizes are so small. I mean, Rafaela, like I said, he's had 33 at-bats. That leads the team. That's not a lot. That's a full week in April, basically. So being that we're in mid-March, hopefully the starting lineups are going to start to look normal, you know, like a major league one, and these guys are going to get locked in. But Tanner Houck is the ace right now. 11 innings pitched, 1.59 ERA. He also leads the team in strikeouts, has only walked two people. So I've said this is the last year I'm going to go to bat for Houck as a starter. And if it doesn't work out, he's going to be a reliever. Another guy who's pitched pretty well, has a lower ERA, doesn't quite have the punch outs, is Cutter Crawford, 1.13 ERA. He's also pitched a few less innings, but another guy who by default will be in the starting rotation. And then finally, before I turn it over to you guys, Cooper Criswell had a pretty good outing on Saturday or Sunday. I think it was scoreless. He's got a 3.48 ERA. He's the replacement for Giolito. So, any thoughts on the pitching?
I mean, if you look at the statistics, I saw a tweet the other day where they kind of ranked all 30 ball clubs, and the Red Sox were kind of middle of the pack on the offensive statistics. And for the pitching metrics, they were top 10 and top five across a lot of the major ones, you know, strikeouts, walks, ERA, et cetera. And it's something to be excited about, right? You know, for a long time, this team has been very offensive heavy, right? We are, you know, we're always going to score the runs. We just got to figure out the pitching part of the program. And, you know, if the pitching can kind of carry their weight a little bit more, it might take some of the pressure off of that offense. And then they can kind of score in bunches because they don't feel like they have to press at the plate. Now, Terry, as you mentioned, it is spring training. It is a small sample size. And we are, I guess, guilty of the narrative of if a guy doesn't do well, oh, it's a slow start. It's a small sample size. But, you know, if he does do well, well, we can extrapolate this. This guy's doing great. You know, he picked up velocity in the offseason. You know, we kind of fall for those gimmicks, for lack of better terms. But all that being said, to me, the statistics of the pitchers and the batters don't necessarily matter. What is most important to me is, will you be ready on opening day? Will you be healthy? Will you be, you know, not dealing with any soreness, not dealing with any impingements or whatever it is? If you can use these outings as an opportunity to get momentum, to get your confidence up, you know, to feel good about your location, about your, you know, your arsenal of pitches, that's great. I want good vibes, I want high confidence, and I want health. That's all I really care for to come out of spring training.
I'm definitely encouraged by what I see from especially a guy like Tanner Houck, who I've had a lot of doubts about, and I've said, you know, more belongs in the bullpen than anywhere else for a while now. But if this is his breakout year, this is the time to do it, because there's open spots in that rotation, and he's kind of forced to be in there because of the Red Sox mismanagement there. So if this is his breakout year, great. He looks really good so far. Let's hope he can keep that up. One guy who looks the same to me, and I still not going to change my mind on him, is Garrett Whitlock. He has not had a good spring. And, you know, they were pumping his tires. Oh, well, he put on weight and he looks like John Lester now. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, okay, so here comes the campaign. Oh, Garrett Whitlock's still a starter. Nope, he's going to be in there. He doesn't look good so far, and I don't think anything's going to change with him. I still have massive concerns about his health and his ability to stay out there. He's not ever going to be a 30-start-a-year kind of guy. I really still think they would be better off with him in the bullpen. And I know they already have a closer. I know they got Jansen. They've already got Martin, setup guy. I know that. But, you know, Martin is dealing with a groin strain already. Those guys are getting up there in age, both him and Jansen. So at some point, the drop off the cliff is going to happen. And if it does happen this year, then it's even more reason to look at Garrett Whitlock and say, you're really better suited in the bullpen for both your career and for the team. So that's the one guy that, you know, I feel like he's going to make the rotation just out of default. And I hate that. I don't think it's going to work. I think he'll end up on the IL by May. But the other guys, Bayo, apart from today, Bayo has looked very good. Cutter Crawford still looks good. That velocity is still there. Nick Pivetta is still Nick Pivetta, and Tanner Houck's been very encouraging. So, and they've got a couple of guys emerging out of that bullpen too. This Justin Slayton kid looks like the real deal. Looks like he's probably going to figure in to the opening day roster. So, the pitching's, yeah, it's been better than expected. I just, you know, again, Garrett Whitlock, I can't get on board with him as a starter. I still think it's not going to go well.
Well, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, I just wrote out five guys that I think are probably going to be starters, and three of them definitely are: Bayo, Pivetta, Crawford, and then you got Houck in there, and then Criswell. I think Breslow really has a lot of personal investment in Criswell, because if he can get Criswell to be a viable starter, even if it's at the back end of the rotation. That's kind of one of his first stamps on this team, if that can happen. So I think there's going to be a lot of motivation there to get Criswell into that rotation, and that's seems to be what they're doing. As far as Whitlock goes, he pitched three innings this weekend, and then from the first inning to the third inning, he lost 3 or 4 miles an hour of velo. So that just tells you everything. And he's like 10 years younger than Martin and Jansen, but in a lot of ways, he's almost the same age, right? I mean, based on health. So stop screwing around with him. You're going to break him. Just put him in the pen. He's already got his money anyway. He's got 1 or 2 years left on his deal, and then there's 2 option years. So there's no need to really mess with Whitlock at this point. Martin and Jansen probably not going to be here in late July. So you're going to need arms in that bullpen. I'm not a believer in Whitlock at this point as a starter. And what do you have to see? I mean, does he actually have to have another Tommy John? Is that when you take it away from him? I don't know what you need to see.
Yeah, and I mean, they have to keep in mind why he fell into their laps in the first place. The Yankees put him in the Rule 5, and he was 23, 24 years old at the time. He was one of their former top prospects, and they put him right in the Rule 5. They're like, you want him? Take him. Because they probably saw what we're seeing now. Like, this kid can't stay healthy. Yeah, he's got a pretty good, you know, sinker ball, and he's got a good arsenal of pitches, but he's never going to stay healthy. So, F it. Yeah, you want him, Red Sox? Go ahead, take him. Have fun. So you have to keep in mind why he got here in the first place. And he showed you how dominant he can be out of the bullpen. It's not like this is an experiment. You already know he can do it. And you know that he can stay healthy doing it. So I don't get this stubborn just bashing our head against the wall. Like, no, he's got to be in the rotation. We have to justify, you know, the contract, or we got to justify why we took him in the Rule 5. No, you don't. The contract's fine for a closer now. So just make him the closer. Put him in there, you know, make him the closer after you trade Jansen when you're, you know, 10 games under 500 at the trade deadline. Like, do it then. Stop messing around.
I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results, right? Like, we've done this self-inflicted wound over and over and over again. I mean, some of the most feared teams in baseball are the ones that can shorten the game, right? If you go Whitlock, Martin, Jansen, 7, 8, 9, the game's over after 6. You just got to get 6 innings out of whatever this rotation is, plus the rest of your bullpen. And that's pretty dang good, right? Like, we need to do everything we can to try to get this game to be as short as possible. And that seemingly makes too much sense. But then again, so does signing Montgomery. And, you know, we haven't done that either. But, you know, the bullpen was a weakness for the longest time, and then it became a strength, and it has been so nice to have it be a strength. And if you were to put Whitlock back in the bullpen, which, you know, I think all of us are big proponents for, that only helps his team. I don't know, you know, why we're being so stubborn about it, but we'll continue to yell at clouds. We'll continue to watch him throw 4 scoreless innings and then get blown up in the 5th and then go on the disabled list or injured list, excuse me. And then we'll, you know, rinse and repeat next time.
Nick Pivetta, curiously, has only pitched 5 innings. I can't see any reports on him. I don't know. Maybe he's going to go tomorrow or something. Admittedly, don't really look at the schedule too much, but so we'll see. I still think Bayo is going to be the opening day starter, but they haven't named one yet, and Pivetta's the only other guy. So I think it should be Bayo, but, you know, Pivetta's the feel-good guy. You know, he's impossible not to root for, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think part of why they're considering Pivetta is because they open up in Seattle, don't they? And he, like, grew up near there.
Yeah.
He's close to there or something.
Vancouver,
so.
Canada, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's like his family will be there. So I think, you know, it's kind of, I think it's more like they might go with Pivetta as a pat on the back. Like, you've been a good soldier for us for a couple of years, and Bayo's not quite ready yet. So, yeah, you'll be the opening day starter. I mean, it was Corey Kluber last year. So it can't get more embarrassing than that. You might as well make Pivetta the one this year.
That's a four-game set in Seattle, too. So you've got Oakland and Anaheim after that. Theoretically, it should be a relatively easy West Coast swing. But I could see Oakland getting off to like a 8-2 start before they, you know, go into the toilet. One team always does. And so we'll see. It's on the West Coast. That doesn't usually go well for us. But any final thoughts?
The only other thought I had talking about the rotation, it is a little strange that, so if they go Bayo, Pivetta, Crawford, Hauk, Whitlock, you don't have any lefties in your starting rotation, which is a little bit odd. You want to at least usually have one, especially in the AL East where you're going to be facing Juan Soto and, you know, Baltimore, all of their good hitters are lefties. Rushman, you know, Jackson Holliday, who's probably going to make the opening day roster, Colton Cowser, like, they're going to face a lot of menacing lefties, and they don't have a lefty to counter in the rotation. So that part's a little odd.
That's true. I mean, we're so used to, you know, we had John Lester all those years, Eduardo Rodriguez, Chris Sale, David Price, just lots and lots of lefties. Martin Perez.
And there's one free agent who could solve that problem, but not going to get him. Too much money.
Yeah. Is Snell also? I know Montgomery is. Oh, they both are.
He is indeed.
Yeah. All right. Cease is a righty, but all right. We will wrap on that. Not sure if we'll be back before Sunday. Maybe. This is the hardest time of year to do podcasts, just for all you guys listening. You know, we're ready for the season to start. We'll be back to four shows in a week. I'm thinking, here's a teaser for you. I'm thinking of doing implementing a show called the Clowns of the Week, which will be people on social media. They'll give a ridiculous take and we'll react to it. But it's a format we might tinker with. The show is ever evolving, so we'll see what comes of it. But so everybody have a good rest of your week. Take care.